everyone. Welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are reimagining the future of customer relationships, how we build them, how we keep them, and how we continue to lead as those expectations rapidly evolve. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I am Ryan Rael.
And we are going to have a fantastic conversation. So Ryan, let's get right into it. What is your hot take?
Yeah, as I was preparing for this conversation, I was thinking, how spicy do I actually want to go, right? And I'm generally someone who's pretty nuanced. When you look at all those like hot takey shows and debate shows, I'm always the one that's be like, well, you know.
I'm a devil's advocate all day long. Whether I believe it or not, I want to explore all sides.
Totally. So with that as the caveat, you know, I would say my biggest hot take is that most business leaders don't actually care about their customers. And, you know, I throw that in there while also saying, I don't believe that at their core, they're malicious or that they, you know, want poor experiences or lives for their customers. But I do think that based on their actions, there isn't a lot of initiative to actually better understand and try to truly deliver a positive experience for most customers, because most of the times they're not even thinking about them. You know, there's a lot of confusing silence from a customer, or if everything seems to be going well with the business, then customers must be happy and everything must be great. And that, you know, assumption can lead to very, very drastic business outcomes if you aren't careful, I guess I should say.
Yeah, I had a guest on the show once who said something to the effect of like, there's only three types of companies out there. There's the operations focused company who is focused on improving efficiency and like really maximizing that bottom line. There's the product focused company who wants to build something incredible that they're proud of. Like an Apple would be a good example of that. Mm-hmm. And then there's the customer focused company. But everyone tries to pretend to be the customer focused company, even if their product, even if their operations, because it's the right, politically mm-hmm. correct answer, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to say, actually, customers are just a means to an end for me to be more operationally efficient. Like, nobody wants to say that, mm-hmm. but it is how some businesses behave.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I struggle with in terms of conversations and experiences I've had with previous business leaders is I do have a level of respect for, you know, the operations focused leader or the sales and marketing really focused leader, because to them, it's how they got the success in the first place. It's how they got to where they are. It's why I had a job in some instances, or why I have clients in some instances, because they've had success getting to the stages that they are. But there is a pivot point where as they're growing and they become more leadership focused and they're not as in the weeds with things, they can only be so hyper focused on that one thing that got them to where they are before it starts to hurt them, you know? And like you said, yeah, it's the politically correct answer to be able to say like the customer is number one, the customer is the most important thing. And, you know, I remember walking around a factory with the leader of a manufacturing company I was working with. And, you know, he was just like, yeah, customers love us. You know, we're so happy. And I'm like, well, how do you know? You know, what is the thing that makes you know that they love you, you know, and started to kind of challenge, like, you know, getting really into like, you know, what are the assumptions that you might be making about this experience? You know, like, do you know why people buy from you? And do you feel confident in that answer, or why people might ghost you, or what do they care most about you and your brand? And he was kind of stumped, like, oh, yeah, I guess I actually don't know. And there is a lot of assumptions that I'm making because business is healthy and things are growing and I'm happy. And but yeah, it's a challenge when you don't actually have that insight. You're really operating blind.
Yeah. And it is hard to get that insight, right? So like, I come from a customer experience research background, right? So
totally.
My entire career has been like interviews, focus groups, surveys. How do we actually talk to people?
Yeah.
And that's, it's hard, difficult work. And it mm-hmm. requires a level of like understanding and nuance around how people respond in a forced environment versus a real environment, right? But sometimes it's weird that companies are almost afraid to actually talk to their customers, because mm-hmm. that's one of the hurdles I have all the time of like, well, when was the last time you actually talked to one of your customers, and not one of your favorites, and mm-hmm. not one who is on your customer advisory board, and mm-hmm. not one who's leaving, just someone in the middle. When did you talk to them?
Yeah.
And they're always like, well, never. And mm-hmm. the reasons are usually like, oh, well, we don't want to bother them, or, you know, only their account manager is allowed to talk to them. I'm in customer success, so I'm not allowed to talk to these people. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, we don't have permission to do that, or whatever the excuse is, mm-hmm. to not actually just talk to the human beings who are on the other side of the procurement table.
Totally. You know, you mentioned like that customer in the middle. I've often referred to them as like the lukewarm customer, right?
Oh, I love that.
And the main reason, like, I kind of point to that is generally the most vocal are either on the one end of the spectrum or the other. They're either really, you know, advocates for your brand, or you're hearing about them because they're on the way out the door. And it's like, by the time you're actually, if you are even lucky enough to hear from that lukewarm customer, by the time you do, that relationship died 3 months ago, you know? And so they're just now sending you the breakup text, so to speak, you know, by the time that it kind of comes up. And so, yeah, totally. I one of the things that, like, yes, you need to kind of, one, acknowledge and identify that I have lukewarm customers out there. Everyone does. What are the ways that I can actually gain insights from them? And I do want to pause, and this is where I like kind of get into that like nuanced side of things too. I talk a lot about how assumptions can kill your business. At the same time, I don't think that guessing and assumptions are totally bad, right? If you were actually trying to think like, I'm going to try and put myself in the customer's shoes, that's a lot of guessing. You're making a lot of assumptions when you do that. It's still a helpful exercise, and that's better than nothing, you know? Right. I think the problem is when you only operate that way, right? If there's only operating off of gut feeling, if you're only operating on what you assume customers want, need, and value, that's when it's a problem. But, you know, having some level of that is it's unrealistic to expect you to wait to make a decision until you have all the data in place and everything, you know, you can feel 100% confident about, because you're never going to have that. But, you know, mixing in some of that so that way you can feel more confident in your decision making is really the key.
Well, and there's nothing wrong with trying to develop like empathy for your customers so that you can see it through their eyes. Like, that's a good exercise.
Exactly.
The problem comes in when people forget that they are not their customer, right? Yeah. When you assume that, well, I want it this way, so therefore my customer will want it this way. We were doing a research project for a huge enterprise CRM. And they were working on their digital marketing process. And it's not something they'd ever really done. They'd been very like salesmen, direct sales, like that kind of work. And they were designing all of their digital experiences for decision makers and creating all of these, you know, websites and guided tours and free trials for the person who would actually sign the check, not necessarily the person who was doing the research on and making the shortlist. And so what we discovered is that very rarely, if ever, the decision maker, especially at their target companies like enterprise clients, were not actually doing any research. They were being presented a short list by their team to say, these are the three that we're considering. Here's the pros and cons of each. Which ones do you want of these three? Yeah. And in this process, we discovered that this client was only making the short list 50% of the time. So they created this entire experience for decision makers, but decision makers weren't seeing it. And they weren't seeing it because they weren't getting into the shortlist half of the time. So they completely reconfigured their digital content to target influencers and shared decision makers, people whose job it is to do the research, to come up with an opinion, to present a shortlist, and then give them the resources to present that shortlist and say, here's the resources to sell your boss on us as your solution.
Yeah.
And, but if we would have just done what the highest paid person at this client decided to do, they would still be designing experiences for decision makers instead of the actual influencers in the process. But they had to step outside of their own preconceived notions in order to even do that.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you know, I do sympathize with it a little bit, because it's like, to do that level of work, it's expensive. You know, you have your...
And time consuming.
Time consuming. Yeah, it's just like... Yeah, that's what I mean by expensive. Your staff or someone is spending all these hours doing this work, and there's a cost associated with that. And yeah, it's brutal. So I do get that, you know. At the same time, had they 100% went all in and duplicated those efforts that you're talking about, if they went with that, you know, opportunity to focus on the decision maker, it would have cost them so much more in the long run. So it's like hard to do that math. But yeah, it's also like, I don't know, anytime someone is doing a brand new product startup, there's so much testing and putting it in front of people and having people try out the product that exists when they're first starting out, and they lose it downstream with all the other smaller decisions, and I say that in air quotes, you know, but what they view as smaller decisions, like, you know, what should I do with my website? What should I do with my CRM software? What should I do with this? You know, they stop doing that level of testing. They stop doing that level of validation. And yeah, it's just, most people don't even realize that they're making assumptions and doing this type of impact. And it's just so difficult to work backwards after you've made those decisions and then try to get validation later. It's just, yeah, it's such an impact on the business in a negative way to operate that way.
I've built several startups, and the ones that I built in what I'll call stealth mode, where I kind of was just like in my dark little laboratory building my product and not really thinking about outside validation, were almost always the ones that didn't work. But the ones that I built very in the open, very vulnerable, very open to what I was working on and constantly showing it to people, even if it wasn't ready to be consumed, even if it was in a state of like almost an embarrassing level of product. But that is when my products were most successful. And the most successful company I've ever worked with, they had like a real attitude of, we are always in customer discovery mode. We are always listening to what our customers are saying. We are never assuming that we know what the answer is, because for them, like, they started as a startup, many, many years of struggle. And then they just learned, like, we have to listen to what the customer says and figure out a way to come to them with what they're asking for and not try to shove something on them. Because with that continuous customer discovery, you're right. You get that validation over and over again. And then the market shifts and you're not surprised because you've been seeing it the whole time.
Yeah, I love that foundation, like you're talking about, of the always listening. You know, so much of the pushback of the work that I do to help, you know, help people understand their customers a bit better is everyone's assumption is that the CX world just means another 20 question survey that nobody wants to fill out, right? And that's not the case. There are so many different listening channels that you can kind of put out throughout the entire experience and start getting feedback without the customer even knowing potentially that you're collecting the feedback. You know, like, right. I was thinking about someone who's getting an oil change. You know, the questions that they ask you when you're bringing the car in, you think this is normal. This is part of the process. They're trying to figure out what they need to do on the vehicle. But so many of those little things can be little insights to then throw back up for market research. Why are people coming in? What is the most common thing? What, you know, all of this stuff is just data that's happening normally in the state that doesn't require, please take our 20 question survey for a $5 Amazon gift card or whatever the case is, right. You know? So yeah, that culture of making sure that at every touch point, is there a way we can gather feedback and insights and putting it in place so it is frictionless for the customer? Like, there are so many amazing ways to do that. And as the technology has evolved, it's so crucial to be able to do that. And it can be painless for the customer. Yeah.
One of the things that gives me the most like anxiety and frustration when it comes to that kind of stuff, though, is people assuming that what is a good signal for one brand is a good signal for them too. And totally. I think that every business is different enough that, like, what might be good for you, like the onboarding survey and or the onboarding questionnaire, pulling in different things and those data points for your oil change, is not going to be necessarily good for a different company with a car dealership, right?
Totally.
Similar, but not the same. And that might not be the same signals. So just because you have a competitor who is tracking a certain thing, or some industry speaker gets on a podcast or a stage and tells you, like, well, you have to be tracking X, Y, and Z, that does not mean that it is predictive for you specifically, or that it's good data in general to be tracking. So, you know, when you're working with people for the first time, they're trying to figure out, like, how do I connect this kind of CX information with helping me be innovative? How do you help them figure out what is actually a signal for them and a conversational touch point that matters, and what is just a distraction?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And like you said, it varies really from business to business. You know, one of the things that came to mind as you were talking about that too is, I've had so many business leaders that have come to me and be like, Ryan, we need to start tracking this metric, you know, call it NPS or whatever it is that you want to start tracking. And, you know, my first question back is, okay, and then what are we going to do with the information, right? Like, how is that going to actually impact things, right? Everything that we do, I'm happy to track this type of stuff. I'm happy to find ways for us to do it. But it has to, one, we have to know that we're going to be able to do something with it. And two, ideally, it has an impact on some of our larger business objectives, whether that's, you know, revenue related or retention related or reducing the cost to serve. Like, there's generally some business outcome that should be impacted by the metric that we're starting to track. So that's kind of the first thing is like when all these things that are possible or as you're doing research, because you are that business owner that's like, I want to do better. I want to be better about doing these things. Are you doing it just for the sake of saying that you did it? Or is it because there's going to be actually something that you can glean that's impactful for it? And can you set up systems in place so that way when you are collecting these feedback, it can go back to the various different departments within your org, or, you know, you can work cross functionally to make sure that everyone is aware of the feedback that you're learning, and it can get thrown back into product. It can get thrown back into engineering, or marketing's aware. And there's something we can utilize this information for that's going to ultimately impact both the customer, but the business positively long-term. So that's the idea is like that starting question of figuring out how will I use this and will I use that, number one. Then two, I also say start small. You know, one of the things that, you know, on a very, very, very small scale, I talked about like that question that I asked about, like what might be an assumption that you're making right now? And that was the like, is it, I feel confident about why customers buy from me, or I feel confident about why they leave. Test one thing, test one assumption, test one little area that you can go after. You don't have to have all 25 metrics tomorrow. If there's something you're curious about, or there's something that you feel confident about, but you've never tested, start with that one thing. You can go one thing at a time. And that small difference is going to make such incremental change long-term by just focusing on one thing. You know, your most core assumption, if you figure out, okay, team, this is my assumption. I want to challenge that. I want to think through it. Let's start with that one. And how would we do that? I think that that's the best way to do it is just like start small and think about what am I going to do with the information that I receive?
Yeah, there's too many people who hear, I need to collect data to track mm-hmm. user behavior and customer behavior. So then they say, okay, what's all the data we could possibly collect? And they try to sweep it all in. And then they're totally overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Or they have so much that, like, to your point, they have no plan of what it's actually going to do. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I was sitting in on a meeting, and someone was talking about something they were going to do. I don't remember the specific context, but it was like, well, if that goes sideways, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And it was like dead silent in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, well, I guess we'll move forward and we'll move on. I'm like, right, but are you going to change your strategy? Are you going to like do something differently? No. They were like, well, if that goes sideways, then we'll just pretend like it never happened.
Yeah.
And if that is how you are treating your data, if your data is going sideways and you're just like, well, it was probably a fluke, probably an anomaly, let's just move on. Mm-hmm. Or it's not actually going to change any of your behavior or your decision-making or your strategy. Don't waste your time making your people collect it and format it and put it into a dashboard for you and present it to you week by week. If it's literally just going to be something that you say, well, we checked the box, we're a data-driven company, right? Yeah. If you're data informed but not data driven.
Totally. And yeah, that's the impact internally and operationally. There's also the side effect of you know, if you're actually leveraging customers. You talked about doing focus groups or surveys or one-on-one interviews or all these different things. There's also the negative impact of if you're not acting on it and utilizing it, the customers are going to be like, well, what the heck? You know, I gave you all this feedback. You didn't change anything. Your processes still stink. Your people are still rude. Your, you know, product still is terrible. Whatever the case is, if you're going to take the time to do even that portion of it, you're only going to create an even more sour response for your customers that it's almost better that you hadn't done it in the first place if you're not going to actually act on it. So yeah, there's the internal operational impact of not utilizing your feedback and your data. But there is an external component too.
Well, and like if we just take it down to the very individual term, right? Like imagine you were dating someone and you said, okay, babe, where do you want to go to dinner tonight? We can either, and then they say, well, let's go to, you know, Chinese or Thai. And then you end up at a French restaurant. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, like, why did you even ask me? And yet mm-hmm. we do that all the time to our customers. We say, would you like, you know, what would you like? And then we completely ignore whatever comes out of their collective mouths. And actually, I saw a study that said the number one reason people don't want to fill out company surveys anymore is because they believe they are a waste of time and nothing will change.
Totally.
And employees feel the same way. Like, they're not filling out employee surveys or comment cards because, one, they're worried about getting in trouble, but two, because they're like, why bother? Nothing will change.
Yeah, absolutely. They haven't had any reason to believe that their feedback's important, which goes back to my hot take that, like, no one actually cares, right? And again, I don't believe that. And I think it at the core, from a human level, people do care, but it's just like their actions don't show that, you know? Right. And so, like, absolutely, from an employee standpoint, from a customer standpoint, if you're not going to take their feedback and implement it and utilize it, or even take an initiative to show that you care, they're never going to believe that you do. And it's only going to hurt your reputation long term.
For companies who are, maybe they're not a startup, maybe they're at that point where they're scaling. And a lot of the companies that I talk to, they've gotten to the point where they've grown enough where they no longer feel like they really have their arms around their customers because they're too big to spend a significant amount of time with every individual customer. How would you advise them to really work on that customer experience intentionally with the right ideas as they are growing up into their next stage of business?
Yeah, as much as possible. The utopic version of this is that, like, when they're starting out, they're setting these foundations from the beginning to, like, making sure that they have listening points at every touch point, you know, but I know that that's unrealistic. So much of things are just like, you know, putting out the next fire as quickly as you can while you're growing. And what's the analogy? Like, building the plane while it's in the air. So
yes,
I'm aware of that. Similar to what I said about starting small when I was talking about, like, you testing your assumptions a bit ago. I do think that in most cases, there are going to be other business problems that arise outside of the customer experience. And those can be generally indicators of where you want to zoom in first. Because, you know, any effort that we do, I want to be able to tie that back to overall business outcomes. And so I wouldn't necessarily say you should start with overall post-interaction feedback initiatives if there's not going to actually have an impact on any issues you might have in your business. So maybe your biggest issue with your business is your marketing team is giving you a ton of leads, but your sales team isn't converting them. My general point would be like, okay, start there. Like, let's start to figure out what type of customer insight work can we do to focus on that singular business problem. So that way it's focused and we can focus on the journey that really touches that specific part of the process. If you're really struggling with support, you know, people are really not happy with your product, I wouldn't waste time on the journey in the discovery and the onboarding phases. I would focus on the stuff that's happening after the delivery of the product. And so let your other business outcomes that you're already worried about lead your customer experience initiatives. Now, and if you have all the time and resources in the world, absolutely, let's explore it holistically and let's build a strong foundation across the board. But generally, there's going to be other things in your day-to-day that are worrying you, that are keeping you up at night. Let your customer experience efforts aid in that. And it's going to help you solve those problems probably quite a bit quicker than it would have if you were just throwing darts at the dartboard. But yeah, I'd say let those problems be the thing that lets you say, okay, I want to dig in deeper. I want to know why. I want to go find out the root cause and figure out how we can solve this problem. And let your customers be at the table to help you solve that problem.
That's an important point. I don't know a single company that has unlimited time and resources, no matter how big or small that they are.
Right.
It seems there's never enough time to actually do things well. But letting your customer have a seat at the table, even if it's in a messy middle, they will respect you more for it because everybody wants to feel heard and valued. And bringing them into that and saying, hey, we're exploring these new things. We would love to get your feedback. We'd love to get your perspective so that we can deliver a better product and experience for you. There's a reason you bought that product. It was to do something for you. Mm-hmm. And if we're falling short of that, help us figure out, you know, we value you. Help us figure out how we get back to basics or whatever it is, whatever the phrasing is. But there's no shame in that. And you don't have to solve problems that are plugging your business in a vacuum. You can open the door and let people be a part of it.
Absolutely. And, you know, this kind of goes into another thing where you know, the visual that came to mind for me is that startup person, again, started with the idea of there's a problem that I want to solve based on people that he've talked to. Here's the solution to that problem. One other thing that I think gets lost downstream is you talked about that the owner that loses touch of the relationship there. One of the most powerful things that I found historically is even for people downstream in the organization, your frontline employees, they never had that likely. They never got to see the experience with the product. You know, like if I'm working in engineering at my office in San Francisco, for example, I never saw anyone actually engage with my product. And there's so much to the like showing meaning to the work that you're doing to everyone across the board for them to see the value in the experience that the customer had with the product, you know? So like you mentioned, the customer came because they found value in it at some capacity. Like one of the things that I found that can boost morale, that can boost meaning, that can boost impact more than anything is showing people experiencing the product or the service and what they love about it and how it's actually solved their problems. Because like, not only just to figure out how I can get better, but it's just like, oh, here's the things that we're already solving and doing well. And that can create purpose in everyone across the organization. And so that's something that gets lost in actually just trying to gain insights from people utilizing your product or service is you're probably doing something, at least something really well. Let everyone see that and have visibility on that, because everyone's job is in service of that. And if they can see that more regularly, again, that's going to just tie back to their own motivation.
You know, thinking about all of the incredible people that you know or that you aspire to know, who is really doing this better than anyone else? Who is leading the charge?
Yeah, one of my favorite people that if I ever feel stuck on anything, I'll always go back to their work is this organizational psychologist, Adam Grant.
I love Adam Grant. He is one of my favorites.
Me too. I mean, I talked about like anytime I feel like I have a problem. He is not a CX person. He's, like I mentioned, an organizational psychologist. He talks about a lot about things in the workspace, but really it's just about psychology and, you know, how that operates both at an individual level, but really across organizations. And if I come across any sort of business problem, there's almost something always that I can find of his that I can tie back into the work that I'm doing. You know, a lot of what I really love about the way he approaches just the world in general is challenging the way you've thought about things, challenging how and why things run the way that they do, making sure that you have data to inform your decision-making. You know, throughout the pandemic, you know, there's was all this polarizing opinion on work from office, work from home. And, you know, I would always go back to what he was finding, you know, and he's constantly updating that, you know, at one point the data said this, then at another point the data is saying, actually, you know, there might be value in having more of like a hybrid approach, and here's the actual impact, and so on and so forth. And none of this is to talk about that specific issue, but more just like he's someone that I always respect to kind of think through, like, what is the actual psychological approach to how you would handle this? What are the ways that you can utilize data and research to inform your decision making? And when you feel like you've made up your mind, you're not done. You should constantly be challenging that. And that just holistic approach to anything that I come across has been super helpful for me. And he has so many incredible books that I would just like recommend. And I read and reread all the time just because I think they've helped me foundationally be a better human, but definitely someone better in business.
He has a great podcast. I can't remember the original one. It's now called Rethinking, but there is an episode of his that always sticks with me where he interviewed Trevor Noah. And he was talking about the creative process of how they create content for, I think it was The Daily Show at the time. Mm-hmm. And one of Trevor's rules was you cannot have any ego in creation. And I've stuck with that. That's been like a 10-year thing now for me. And so my one rule from Adam Grant and that Trevor Noah conversation is like, there's no ego in creation. So anytime we're working with someone, like everyone puts their ideas on the table. No one gets to make fun of anyone's ideas. No one gets to shoot it down, but you don't get to leave any ideas for yourself. So if you're too afraid to say it out loud, then you shouldn't even be in the room because there's no ego in creation. And I was like, oh my God, yes. Adam is amazing. If you haven't checked out his podcast, make sure you do so. His books are incredible. He's just a smart dude. And you're right, though. It's the evolution of his thinking that makes him super credible. Because he doesn't lock in on this like, oh, well, one time I said it was remote work only. He evolves his thinking because he's constantly rethinking, hence the name of his podcast. So
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I, you know, it's a silly one, but I think it was also in another podcast that I heard him doing as well. But like he was staunch in this belief that like he was going to be really intentional and focused and present when he was with you. But that also means that he might be late to the next meeting. But mm-hmm. if you know him, you know, you may think that he's being disrespectful or late, but you know that when I'm with you, I'm going to be present with you. And someone kind of challenged him and it was like, no, I think that's kind of like your rationalization that that's the case, you know, like people may still think that it's weird. And so like hearing him kind of rework. And now when I've heard him talk about it, it kind of is a bit more nuanced in that way. And so, yeah, just respect him so much and let, you know, his book Give and Take on like what the value of like giving does and having that core philosophy changed my life too. And so, yeah, he's someone I'll always go back to.
Yeah, we love Adam Grant here. If someone is connecting with you, however, and they want to learn more, they need some help, they want to learn more about CX and how they can really connect small business operational efficiency with actual customer experience.
Yeah.
Where can they find you online?
Yeah. LinkedIn. You can find me, Ryan Riel. I also have my customer experience professional certifications on there. So you'll find me, Ryan Riel, CCXP. On LinkedIn. Also, my company is Tight Ship. We help small, mid-sized businesses with their customer experience strategy. You know, a lot of focus with product-based businesses. So you can find us at tightship-cx.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ryan, for being on the show. This was a super fascinating conversation.
Alyssa, you run a great show. Thanks so much for letting me be a part of it.